to the NBA Roadshow, episode number 307. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me, and that's not all. We got hot tea in the building as well.
What?
Oscar Willis from the award-nominated
The
Mag Life. Oh, I mean, listen, once you've got that award nomination, it's for life. It's like, you know, once a champ, always a champ. It's just for now on, World MMA Award. In fact, I am a World MMA Award winning Journalist of the Year. Now listen, it might have been a decade ago.
show him the rings, John.
Yeah.
Show him the rings.
Hey, can't take that away from me, baby. I'm still a champion. You know what I mean?
Get that in the Twitter bio right now.
There's Tom Brady, and then there's you, dog.
Yeah, man.
Right below it.
I got lots of nominations. Lots of nominations. Guys, it is good for us all to be together. The crew has returned from Fight Island. Everybody's gotten their rest, and we got the whole posse in here talking about UFC 258. We'll get into that because a little Bobby Green there.
Little Bobby Green.
We're definitely going to talk about Bobby Green. You should have just left
that with no context. He's just doing his vinegar strokes on the beginning of the podcast.
Yes. If you're wondering why he's over there doing that and making that noise, this was in homage to Bobby Green, who we'll talk about a little bit later. But his virtual media today, it's definitely worth checking out. While we are not the biggest fans of Virtual Media Day, Bobby Green can make Virtual Media Day work. He had a reporter from Turkey, actually, and they had this whole exchange. The whole exchange was hilarious. He's like, "Oh, I'm from Turkey," and he's like, "You should come out here sometime." And Bobby Green was like, "Can I stay with you?" He's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Can Bobby Green stay at your house?" And he was like, I guess so. Yeah, okay, you can come over. He's like, cool, I'll be there. So then he goes to ask him his question. And he's like, how would you describe your journey through MMA? And Bobby Green says, you know, because he's staring at that blank computer, and he says, can you see me? Guy's like, yeah. He's like, you can see my face right now. He's like, yes, I can. And Bobby Green stands up and starts thrusting his hips.
Two arms grabbing thrust.
And he's like, because I've been getting
Yeah. See, that's what you have to do to the fighters. To the fighters listening, all you have to do is simulate sex on the video, the virtual media day, and we'll actually
and it works.
Yeah.
It works. But we'll talk
about
it.
That was first.
That was one of the best virtual media days of all time. But
next time he's actually going to take it out.
But thankfully, we did not have to do virtual media day. We watched it today in case there were a couple of clips, but we all did the in-person media days. Oscar Willis, I know you're used to it now at this point. Obviously, you've done all the Fight Islands, so you've gotten to do them this year. But that's the first in-person media day I know that you've been a part of in the United States since back in March.
Yeah.
Because you didn't take part in the week before.
It was that long ago.
Dude, it's just – we talked about it a little bit, Cole Coffee and I, last week. But just I'll ask you as well. I mean, does it not just – and I always feel like maybe I'm being silly about this, but it's just – it's such an effect, man. It's to me, it's night and day.
Well, to me – It's hard to describe because obviously we're so fortunate to be working anyway, rah rah rah. But throwing all that shit aside, it gives me things to wildly speculate on that I can at least acknowledge in myself, like, well, this is ridiculous that I'm looking so far into this.
Right.
But I want to look like, you know, the fight's coming out. I want to look crazy, Mattson. Well, when he said this, he moved his left hand. You know,
I want
that level of that insane speculation. I want something to go and tell my friends after, like, well, when he was saying it, I could see in his fucking eyes. He meant it. You know, I love that sort of speculation. And you just don't get that from them, apart from Bobby Green, you know, shagging a stool. You just don't get that on the virtual media day. So to have it back in person in Vegas was kind of fun, too. It's funny, I didn't realize it was the last time it would have been Romero Adesanya, right?
Isn't that crazy?
Actually, that was the media day where I asked Romero what's the worst mistake he's ever made, and he just went, you don't want to know, and made me piss my pants a little bit. So it's kind of funny.
You wouldn't urinate yourself over a virtual media day.
No, I wouldn't even shit. So, yeah, it's great to have them back. I think for the fighters as well, man, it probably gives them a sense of normality for a fight week, you know? And like at the beginning when they did the virtual media days, I was concerned that the fighters would prefer it because
right.
It was so easy.
Like, oh, we don't have to mess with this anymore.
You know, they can just come in. Now, as they've gone on, I realize they probably hate them as much as we do. And now I think you see the enthusiasm of them in person again. Yeah. So I think we're going to have a nice little uptick going forward. For
I agree. I think that just that energy when they walk in there, and it was at the Apex, and there was a little table set up, and you know, on the stage, and you get to see the step and repeat banners, and I think you can just see it in their eyes, man. They're like, all right, cool.
I was thinking as well when they were up there. You know, they're sitting there, they're doing a press conference, essentially a press conference because of the way they're set up. Doesn't it make them feel like they're a bigger deal?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, clearly.
For Kamaru Usman, who's, I feel, we'll get into this, has kind of been fucked on this pay-per-view, you know what I mean? Like, he's getting pay-per-view points, not that many. But for him, doesn't he want to feel like he's a champion? Doesn't he want to feel like he's addressing the public?
Of course.
He wants to talk. I think for them, it's probably pretty cool, too. You know, like, oh, I have something...
On the stage, the bright lights, multiple cameras out there.
Some sort of showmanship. Yep. Some sort.
Exactly.
Yeah, because if you caught the very first thing that he said when he sat down, did you catch it? The very first words when he sat down, he's like, oh, it's kind of slim in here.
Oh, he did say that, right? Yeah. Well, we are a smaller bunch.
It's not like we used to be. Obviously, it was something he was thinking about. Yeah. It was on his head. You know, like, he's used to walking in these things and having, like, 28 different media, 30
fans.
Different medias, you know, just, and fans, you know.
Well, I mean, even his last fight was in Fight Island where we had a bigger selection because you had global media there, right?
Yeah,
you had international
and he,
media.
And he had a last-minute, like, interest, and he had a lot of shit to do, I'm sure. It's funny, it's funny, Gilbert was saying, oh, there's a lot of media for this fight. It's like, well, fuck up.
Yeah.
Like,
better get
for
ready,
this
son.
One. Like,
better get ready.
But, yeah, you know, like, it's funny, the setup they have for Media Day where it's just one person at a table, it actually kind of felt almost like old-school boxing. You know, it's like a champion addressing the media. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a good look for them, and I felt it benefited them immensely because I think before Media Day, I wouldn't say many people were, like, supremely hyped for this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But I getting the sense from the feedback and the views and stuff, I think people are now like, oh, there is some intrigue to this.
I'm intrigued by it. We'll get into that in a minute because I want to get into that because I'm right there with you on that, and I've got some thoughts on that. But let's start with the breaking news that happened right before we sat down to start recording. Khamzat Chimaev is out of the fight with Leon Edwards. March 13th was the scheduled date. Not going to happen anymore. And at this point, Dana White has told ESPN's Brett Okamoto they got to move on, which is totally understandable. Yeah. I think a lot of people – I guess I want to start there. Well, first of all, let me start with I take full responsibility for this. first of all, I was not going to be there that week. I've got CFFC duties that week. So I'm sure that, you know, that probably played a big part into it. They heard
that
I wasn't going to be there.
He was going to struggle
like,
three.
Yeah,
he was going
like,
to struggle
wait,
three.
Morgan's not going to be there. But no – I tell you what
I
is funny,
this
though.
Guy.
What is funny is, you know, when we were in Fight Island the last time, we sat down, I think it was on a spinning back click episode, where we were kind of doing like, hey, throw me a crazy prediction ahead of Fight Island. And I said, okay, I think Michael Chiesa is going to beat Neil Magny, and then something is going to happen to the Khamzat Leon fight. It's not going to happen, and Michael Chiesa is going to step in and fight on that card. I'm not saying it's...
Is that true?
It could have. I'm not. Well, I don't know if Chiesa is going to step in. It seems like Wonder
Boy. No,
but
you did predict.
No,
that?
I literally said that. Yeah. I said I believe Chiesa is going to beat Magny,
all your fault,
and then he's going to step in on short notice for that
this
fight.
Is all your fault.
So
it
I do take
fault.
Full responsibility for this.
So you're dead in Chechnya, bro. They're fucking coming for you.
And just to clarify, from you know reading what I'm seeing off this fine publication at MMAJunkie.com, this was not a recurrence. This was not a recurrence of COVID, but this was still from the lingering the last time he had COVID.
But this is, I believe, the second time the fight's been pushed back because of said lingering effects.
That's scary, man.
So I think Leon got it, pushed back. Khamzat got it. No. Then they rescheduled it. Then the lingering effects made it push back. And then now, months after the fact, it's been pushed back again.
Because should have double masked.
Yeah. You know what? It's fucking his fault.
It is his fault. But, you know, that's
joke.
And I'm not going to get into the COVID thing, but that's one of the things they're saying about and, you know, we talk about COVID all the time, about the things. The lung, the way that I've seen certain people talk about the damage it does for their lungs is comparable or worse than severe smokers, what it does to your lung capacity.
Years, I heard. 15
so
years smokers.
If the guy is really, really suffering from the lung, he might be one of these outliers that actually it did really affect his lungs or lasting.
Well,
I assume it's not all the smoking and cannabis he's doing.
Yeah, right. I mean... It should be. He needs to hang out with Bobby Green.
It is alarming to me. I mean, I said, and again, like you said, I don't want to go too deep down the COVID. I understand it's a hot topic. It's a divisive one and a controversial one. But when you see an athlete of this caliber, yeah, having lingering effects.
A young top-level athlete.
Oh, that scares me a little bit. I just don't think we know enough yet.
Shout out to Submission Radio. They did an interview with Chris Weidman, who just had to pull out of his own fight because of COVID. And Chris Weidman was saying that all the doctors he spoke to said one of the worst things you can do with COVID is work out while you have it. That's where we're...
Thank God I'm good then.
But that's what they said. That's where we're seeing the lingering effects. If you work out while you have it,
because you're stressing the lungs,
that's when they're seeing the lingering effects.
Interesting.
Maybe Hamza just thought like, "Oh fuck it, it'll be fine. I'll just get through it and be too tough."
I'm a young dude. That's a badass.
Yeah, I don't know. Wow. But if that's the case, that's like very. I mean, shit, the guy's a case study at this point.
I've been on a preventative COVID program for the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, but they're not working out.
It's not working out.
And one thing, this will be the last COVID test, the last COVID bit of knowledge that I've heard.
That was a cough.
I know. You all got that COVID now. Your ears have COVID now. Is check your vitamin D levels is what I've heard from all the anti-vaxxers and all those stuff. Is if you have a good vitamin D level, you run the less risk of it if you do catching it affecting your lungs.
Because I keep giving my vitamin D to everyone else.
You know what I'm saying? But no, seriously, check your vitamin D levels or take a vitamin D supplement and you'll feel better about it.
So look, what do we do with the fight here? I mean, first of all.
And then don't ask Oscar because his vitamin D is different. It tastes funny.
Taste? It goes rectal.
But then it's got to go somewhere after that, bro.
So this fell off the rails. How quick?
Did I mention that we'd been pre-gaming a little bit with some proper 12, Irish whiskey?
Did you have a spiel? Oh my God, we've killed half the bottle. How did that happen?
I don't know. I've been supping away.
We literally just opened it. This was the proper 12 I bought for Thanksgiving, and now I guess it's thanks to have us all together here again. How's that? Warm feelings. So we're eating. We're having the proper 12, and it's. I'm not gonna lie. As much as I was like sort of shitting on it at first, it is a decent whiskey. It tastes pretty.
I'm telling you, I think like people want to hate the owner of it.
It's a decent whiskey.
I don't know how you could, right? I mean, it's such a fine...
mate, it does the job.
You guys couldn't just see him flip off John right
now. Oh, thanks, mate. No, mate, it fucking does the job.
It's actually decent.
It's good.
I mean, I will lie. You guys are drinking it straight on the rocks. I like to drink a lot of whiskeys if I'm going to be drinking like with you guys.
I usually have a Sprite. You just never provided me with it. Oh, ginger ale.
I love ginger ale, though. If you want some ginger ale, I just don't have any Sprite, but... So I'm supping it with a little bit of ginger, and it's really good. This is really, really good. It's going down very, very easy.
Yes, it is. As everyone can tell,
as you can tell by the half bottle somehow that became like magic. We just opened it.
All right. So what are we going to – all right. First of all, I guess for Leon Edwards, right? I mean, how many times can you say, I just feel terrible for this guy, right? I mean, this dude has to have a fight.
They have to give him something. They cannot say, oh, we really want this fight to be the next one you have.
Well, thank fuck Dana that said would be, they'll move on. Right?
That is so unfair. That's what they said. I mean, but until we see it on the contract, like this poor guy has been
– So what's the fight?
Sitting around.
What's the fight?
Let me pull
it's Wonderboy. It's
Wonderboy.
That would be good.
Wonderboy just called him out on Twitter and said it's time for 3 versus 5. But if you're Leon Edwards, I made this argument before. COVID, if you're talking about whose career has been most affected by COVID, it's Leon Edwards because he was scheduled to fight Tyron Woodley, who at that point was not washed, in London. That's really rude. Tyron. But he was meant to fight Tyron Woodley in London, and then...
There goes his Patreon subscription. He's totally cancelling it.
But if he'd have beat him like Gilbert Burns did, he'd have got that title shot and would have probably fought Kamaru in July in Abu Dhabi. And he got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And I just think the Hamzat thing he wasn't ever really into. And then he realized the star power Hamzat was having, and he realized that that was the right move to do. And it kept getting fucked up. And then he wanted to fight either Magny or Chiesa, which is completely justifiable after that long out of the cage.
Right.
They wouldn't do it because they really wanted that Hamzat
rub,
to be honest. Let's be honest. I feel so bad for him. I actually saw Sandu say – I was trying to say his full name then. And I was like, no.
Shamatkar Sandu, former MMA Junkie contributor.
Thank you. But they
Sandu MMA. That's the reason he goes by Sandu MMA. He always says, I don't expect anybody to say his first name.
I usually can do it. It's whiskey. Yeah. But he was saying, you know, at this point, you could probably just give him the winner. of Gilbert versus Kamaru.
You could. I mean,
because
Usman has been saying, like, hey, he's deserving there. Burns has been saying.
Well, like Masvidal and Colby are like, they're not around.
See, that's what I would like. I honestly would love still to see Masvidal and Edwards, but Masvidal's not going to take it.
It's never
right?
going to happen.
Never going to take
Especially
it.
Especially today, Dana did an interview where he's saying, oh, the coaches we're looking at for the Ultimate Fighter are welterweights, and it'll be really fun if we pull it off. I fucking wonder who he could be talking
Masvidal
about.
Masvidal Covington, obviously.
Yeah. So I think for me, Wonderboy's the fight for Edwards. It's the only thing that he can do to make sense and give the guy a paycheck.
Especially without going backwards.
Yeah, well, like, he can't fight Chiesa.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Chiesa, like, and I love the fight. I would love it for Chiesa. But, yeah, for Edwards, you're like, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to fight a guy that's probably stylistically awful for me, that doesn't have the name value, that doesn't have the
and
ranking.
If you think about it as well, man, like, if you did Wonderboy versus Edwards, if Masvidal and Colby are going to be filming and they're going to be out for a while, and then God knows how long negotiations are going to take with either of them anyway. The winner of Wonderboy versus Leon is an absolutely justifiable number one contender.
Should absolutely justify that as a
number
one
contender. To either
Kamaru
or Gilbert.
Woodley's already taken Luque. So there's two other guys out of it. It's the only dude that's unavailable.
I like it. I think that's a fight to make. Let's do it. Book it. It's done. We've already solved the problem.
It's not happening March 13th. But.
Not happening March 13th. That card is going to need some help, huh?
It's a rough one, you know?
Probably get some late notice stuff in there. All right, listen, one other thing before we get into UFC 258. I got to mention it. This Gina Carano story is way too big. I talked about it a little bit on MMA Junkie Radio this morning and admitted, hey, look, I'm not overly passionate about this subject, but I guess I just want to get your guys' thoughts because, listen, I covered Gina's career, you know, when she was at the peak of the game, and I can tell you that she was always fantastic to cover. She was a huge star. She was a central figure of the sport. She was a fun interview. She did everything she should. I think genuinely for anybody that was a part of that era, a beloved figure of the sport, you know, but to me, I'll just say, like, I think she dropped the ball here. And, again, we don't want to make things overly political here. We try to talk about fights and have fun. But I've seen this debate online about whether, you know, she deserved to be dropped from The Mandalorian, which I should, by the way, point out, she wasn't really actively in the middle of filming anything.
I think they're going to give her a spinoff.
Well, I did see the report that they were talking about giving her a spinoff, and they didn't. But they did say in their statement, look, she isn't actively employed at this time because they're basically just contract workers, but we're not going to employ her in the future. I guess I just want to say this, that I think she messed up, man, and I don't think she's a bad person. I really don't think she's a bad person, but I just don't think it's okay to compare anything to the Holocaust, to genocide of any kind. It's just not okay, and she made a mistake.
When you say stuff like genocide and you actually hear the word, you're like, that is pretty powerful shit, and actually things that should be compared to that are very slim to none. For the sake of the podcast and keep things light, I don't think we should go like necessarily too deep into it or whatever.
Right.
But I do wonder sometimes, growing up in the UK, all we fucking learned about was World War II because that was like one of the very few times we were the good guys. That's literally like the only time they ever wanted to teach us shit in history. And we got taken to France, we got shown a lot of stuff, and to Poland and to Belgium. And I often wonder if that maybe Americans who grew up here, who didn't have any relations who were involved in the war, maybe it's easier to disconnect from what happened there.
I've never heard the stories. I've never seen the camps.
That happened ages ago. It's 70 years ago. Yeah. Not that long.
It's not that long ago.
So for me, I wonder sometimes if there's maybe just a little bit of lack of understanding of the true like nature of what went on. To compare anyone in America in 2021 to the Jews in the Holocaust, you're just talking fucking shit, to be honest, and you should read a book. And chill the fuck out. And as far as Gina, again, I'm similar to you. I don't think she's a bad person. I think she might be, in her own way, I'm going to use this word and I'm probably going to get shit for it. In her own way, she's kind of a victim of this internet culture and this social media phenomenon of sucking you in until your reality is what you read rather than what you live. You know, instead of seeing the world around you, you're seeing the world of what people are saying around you, and you can believe that rather than how the world really is. You know, Jean is clearly a Republican. She clearly feels like victimized for her beliefs. I mean, fuck, you got a job at Disney. I don't know how victimized you really are, to be honest. You got a job at Star Wars, like, whatever. So I don't know. I think maybe Gina needs to put the phone down and take a few months to sort of learn
I think she can come back from this. I mean, if she can apologize and be genuine about it, I mean, she might not be come back and jump back into a Star Wars thing or whatever. But as far as just back in society, but she made a mistake. She's not a bad person, but she made a mistake. And this, it's to me, it's indefensible. And the other thing is the argument is about this whole free speech argument that just bugs the heck out of me because you do have free speech in this country.
And we work in media.
Exactly. You have free speech in this country. But it doesn't mean that you can say whatever and not expect to face any repercussions for it. You have to face the repercussions of whatever it is you say. And so you're allowed to say it, yes. But that doesn't mean your employer has to say, and you can still continue to work.
I think anyone who listens to this podcast will understand that if they've listened to it for any length of time, they understand that yourself, myself, Cold Coffee, we're not out here like, oh, did you hear what they said? Let's cost them their fucking jobs. I've never really been like that. I hate it. I think it's stupid. But Man, she said being a conservative is like being a Jew in the Holocaust. You know, being a Jew in the Holocaust is kind of its own thing.
Yeah. There's nothing else like it.
Probably leave that topic alone, Gina.
Yeah.
Also, you got a job at Star Wars. You probably guessed it wasn't going to go well, you fucking it. Like, I don't know.
And the thing is, I mean, like, she's free to say anything she wants.
She is.
You have the freedom of speech in this country, but it does not mean that you are guaranteed to keep your employment.
Mm-hmm.
You are a representative of the brand, and while they will not tell you, don't say this, what you say can have repercussions. And for her to think that she can just go off the rails and say things that she had to know was very divisive and would be very abrasive to other people, that it would affect some people. So she has the freedom to say whatever the hell she wants, but there is going to be repercussions. But you're also, I mean, like, Gina, she's came up and she did a lot of things, but Gina was the daughter of, like, an NFL quarterback, and I think even he came from money. This is a person that was very, very entitled her whole life, growing up in a very, very spoiled household, doing this thing. I mean, who knows what, you know, she was sort of, brought up on, and these are the kind of things that a lot of people, unfortunately, are they're products of their environment growing up. And who knows what she was ultimately led to.
But don't you think she's a product of the internet rather than her environment? Because she's never been like this before.
Well, I think she just finally feels that there was a point where, you know, people say she could say things and reach a wider. These could be stuff that she said in private for many, many years. But now
sure, we don't
she
know
was
that
given,
for sure.
She
I've never
was
heard
given
of her,
platform.
But we haven't known.
I just feel like there's an inherent radicalization to the internet by the algorithm that sites provide you. I just think it's an inherent a radicalization problem that we have, both left and right,
yeah,
that we're not addressing as a society, and it's going to fuck, well, your society, not mine. I can go home. But, like, well, actually, my home city. But
I mean, I believe it, but I don't think that she became the way that she is just from reading the internet and things. If anything else, it maybe just made her feel she found people like-minded that would maybe choose her, take her words, and let's raise the flag up on this. I get you.
It's a very ugly flag.
I mean, well, we just had a president that of our country that was just saying this is the way.
Just, yeah. I see what you did there.
I see what you did there.
I guess the point I want to make is, you know, the argument is that, oh, this cancel culture. To me, this doesn't – it's not cancel culture. This happens in 2021, 2011, 2001,
so
1991.
If you say something that embarrasses your employer, you will lose your job.
You hit the nail on the head.
And that was the same in the 90s. Yeah, it was the same in the early 2000s.
You hit the nail on the head. In the same little flurry of Instagram stories that she posted one about how one man can make a bunch of hypocrites nervous, referencing probably Mr. Trump. And then she did another one with, meanwhile in California of a guy covered in masks and stuff like that. Guess what? You won't get cancelled for that. I don't care about your opinion on that, to be honest. It's when you refer to the victims of the Holocaust that actually it went a little bit too far.
That's it.
And guess what? If you don't fucking draw that line and say that is too far, what
then
can you say next?
Line?
You know what I mean?
And there's nothing more extreme than
that. For the people who are like, I hate cancel culture. I actually hate cancel culture. And here I feel like I'm advocating for it. But
I just don't think this qualifies as cancel culture. Like you said, if it was the mask thing, if it was like, oh, we're just tired of what she's saying about the mask, and so she has to go.
I'll even give you anti-vaccine, even if I disagree with that massively. I'll even let you have that. But is she allowed to walk into work with a fucking pillowcase and eyes cut out on her head and be like, well, you know what? I'm not a big fan of. No, you can't do that. And this is an example of that.
That's it. That's all I want to say. I hope she comes back, because I do hope that she apologizes. We'll see if she decides to take responsibility or not. I hope she apologizes, and I hope she works her way back, because I do believe that she's not a bad person. But
agreed.
I don't believe she's been unfairly targeted here. I just believe she made a mistake. For whatever reason, whatever cause, whatever the background was, I just believe it's an indefensible mistake, and I don't think you blame Disney or Star Wars for being unfair, quote-unquote,
cancel
culture.
Which is ironic, because in a different generation, Disney would have loved it.
So what are we saying? Gal Gadot? Can she be the next Cara Dune? Who else?
Well, she has to have Cara Dune, right?
Well, no. But, I mean, she became sort of like a nice little partner for the Mandalorian. Just somebody to back it up. Somebody had a history with.
Why don't we pick somebody who didn't make some fucking cringeworthy video and made themselves look like a dickhead when she was like, imagine.
Who did that? Gal Gadot did that?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I spent more time in the computer.
I thought you meant Wonder Woman.
I was like,
that is Wonder Woman.
No, that's what I was saying. I thought you meant that was the cringeworthy video. That last Wonder Woman.
Hey, that last one was okay.
Yeah, it was
no, it
bad.
Wasn't.
It had Gal Gadot in
didn't
it.
Did she like. Never mind.
That part of it was good. The rest of it was bad. All right, let's get into UFC 258. That is the fight card this weekend. And
she's also from Israel as well, so it's like a decent little substitute.
Let's see where you're going with that. Thanks. All right, UFC 258, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns in the main event. And you touched on it. Hot T, you mentioned the fact that, listen, I mean, this is not a heavily hyped pay-per-view. This is not one that I think anybody expects to perform especially well, at the box office, so to speak. But I got to say, I'm excited about this fight. And to me, it is not about the former teammate thing. I mean, I know that's the storyline. I get it, man. That's the selling angle. To me, it's the stylistic matchup of this, man. I think Usman is an elite fighter, and I know that people aren't the biggest fans of him. But I think if you look at what he's done, especially lately, man, the run that he's been on, the domination that he's had, it's incredibly impressive. I mean, the Covington fight wasn't domination, but it was just a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
And he did get the finish. And then the others, I mean, he's just been, you know, blowing out people, you know, winning every round. But when I look at Gilbert Burns, and first of all, I just love Gilbert Burns as a person, man. He's just a good dude, great energy, you know, fun guy to be around. But he possesses everything I would think that you would want to be able to beat Usman. Like, you know, in the stand-up, Usman, he's going to keep pressure on you. He doesn't have knockout power. I mean, I know he ended up, you know, breaking Covington's face, as he likes to point out. He did get the stoppage there. But you don't think of him as that, you know, one-hitter-quitter type power. But Burns does possess that. So if he catches him, you know, he could cause problems. And then when you do think about Usman's and his strength, it's you know, clinch game and obviously taking you down and just grinding you out. I don't know that you can do that on top of Gilbert Burns, man. Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate it. Bobby just chiming in from time to time.
He's like, you had me at the clinch game.
But, man,
I'm taking him down.
Going to grind him out.
That's going to be one of
those. Did it fall off the rails, like, at the beginning or, like,
oh, I don't know if we were ever actually on the rails. I'm not actually sure.
I felt like we were fine leading into it. It's only when the fucking recording started that everyone turned into a degenerate.
It's like the it must be the Ohio thing. He's got the opposite Stipe. You know how Stipe will just be, like, joking, and then the red light comes on, and then he just goes, yeah. Uh-huh. You're the other way. We were having a nice conversation.
Oh, is this only my fault?
Yeah, we hit the
Yeah, you started off the podcast talking about, like, making fucking noises. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to tell you.
All right, so Gilbert Burns, dangerous. I don't know. So, you know, you said it, Oscar. I mean, obviously the in-person media days make it fun, and we had a chance to speak to both guys. And I don't know, man. It feels like – I don't know if the public level for this fight is exciting yet. And listen – like I was talking to my dad today, and he was asking about the pay-per-view, and, you know, my dad's a casual, but he's honestly just getting into the sport now, and he bought the last pay-per-view, and he's like, this one's on pay-per-view this
Thanks,
weekend,
man.
Right? Yeah, and I told him, I was like, and I even him, I was like, this might not be the one you want to spend your $70 on. Now, it's a great, I think there's better quality of this card than most people, but I'm talking about I don't know that a casual would walk away, you know, thinking, yeah, I got my $70 worth or not. I'm not sure. I don't want to poop on anybody.
$70?
I know, $70.
Jesus.
Yeah, $69.99, right?
So
$69.95 or something.
$69.99. But I'm excited for this fight. Tell me. I knew you were going to.
Yeah, we were both, for the listeners, we were both looking at him, waiting for
like,
him.
All right,
we're waiting for him to simulate
fucking
the air.
Throw something in there?
Jesus Christ!
That was my wallet right there.
Your wallet? Flesh wallet.
You took it further.
Yeah, anyway. So this fight.
We've only gone 30 minutes. Is that too late to start over?
Is it 30 minutes?
29 minutes.
God. And it fucked up on minute three.
We could start over.
No. So Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. It's kind of a sucker story because I feel like it never really plays a part in the fight. But the whole teammate versus teammate thing, I think it's very hard to ignore that, and I love it. I really do.
It's intriguing. It's part of the sell.
I really do enjoy it. And I think these two guys, whether subconsciously or not, they've kind of played into it, man, because I think every time they've been asked about the sparring, they've given interesting answers. So, for example, we talked about reading into too much shit at the media day. I noticed when I asked Gilbert Burns, how was the sparring between you? And he went, well, he knows I can tap him out. He knows I can tap him out. And when I asked Kamaru about the sparring, he went, well, listen, you know, when you're training for a championship fight, obviously they bring these guys in to push you. I was like, oh, it sounds like motherfucker got pushed. Like, you know, I read into that sort of stuff, and I find that compelling. Where I'm left at is, and this is no rational basis in reality, I believe Gilbert Burns probably got the better of them in the sparring, but I believe Kamaru will win the fight.
That's what's so interesting.
Do you know
about
that? I really do, and I think it stylistically, like you said, John, it is compelling viewing.
All right, let's do this. Let's set the table. Because we said the in-person media days, the answers were interesting. We've played some Usman audio over the past couple weeks, so I'll leave that alone. But we did. I didn't get a chance to talk to Gilbert Burns and lead after this. So here is the crew right here, all working together on this. You will get questions from John Morgan. You will get questions from Oscar Willis. And the recording was all done.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
By
there,
Ken
I
Hathaway.
Hit record.
So when you hear the audio quality of it, and you know, if you watch the video and you see it, this all came from Mr.
Crisp.
Cole Coffey himself.
I was thrusting as I recorded this.
The crew came together. Here is
not came
Mourinho.
To, didn't come together like
oh,
that.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Canceled. I would never
we're about
thought
to be canceled,
about that.
Guys.
Yeah, we're
this was the episode. We
Gina,
all,
where are we going next?
We got fired from our own podcast, which was really interesting. gonna have to call you in the office. Anyway, all right, here's Gilbert Burns.
Gilbert, here we are, just a couple days out from a world title fight. Give me the idea, man. What's the feelings like inside of you right now?
I'm super excited and been waiting for so long. You know, November, December, maybe January, we're finally here. I'm very excited. I'm super happy to be here. But still a lot of work to do, you know, a lot of media. I'm not a complainer. I'm doing everything on my best. But a lot of media, still got to train, still work to do. I still study a lot, see a lot of things, strategies already on my head, things that I want to do. But still a lot of work to do, and I hope everything still going on, you know, and then we make that fight happen on Saturday.
I was going to say, does that little worry in the back of your mind just a little bit after everything you've gone through?
Yeah. Still, like, first time here in Vegas, it wasn't the best time. Got COVID, had to drive back. But one before was great because it was the title of the fight. So I have good memories here, more than bad memories. But still, I got to live by the hour, by the day, you know, make sure everything goes as planned. But still have little things. I can't wait to come Friday, make that weight, you know, face off and come Saturday night. I'm excited. I'm making the days count the hours and very excited.
You know what the storyline is here, man, the former training partners that have worked together. But, I mean, realistically, tell us, I mean, is there much of a psychological edge or a tactical edge that either one of you might have based on your experience together?
Not really. We had a lot of wars together. He can say, oh, I beat him a couple rounds. But I say, yeah, but I beat you a couple rounds too. So it's kind of very even, the advantage that we have knowing each other's game. The thing that I believe I got advantage is the teammates, because he left the team. And all the teammates that helped me getting prepared for him know him very well. And every single one of them, like, oh, he does this good. Watch out here. Oh, you're going to hit him with that one. So that feedback from the from my teammates was very good, from the coaches as well, was very different. If it was just me and Kamaru, yeah, 50-50. I know he knows me. But the difference with the teammates and the coach, yeah, that gave me a little advantage, if I see.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Of course, you were, you know, a week out from fighting him back in July. So I'm curious, in getting ready this time, did you change anything in terms of either how you prepared or your game plan? Or is it pretty much just, hey, man, we had the right plan. We just got to do that again.
I kind of follow a lot of the plan that I had. But for sure, I had a lot of more traps. You know, I have a lot of more time to see. I saw the Masvidal fight. I saw a lot of things that I could use. I do believe he's going to come with little new things. You know, not a lot of things, but a couple new things. Trevor Whitman, he's known as a good coach. I believe more as a boxing stance. So his hand might be a little bit sharper, but the plan is the same. Every time that I go to the octagon, I don't want to just hold the guy. I don't want to just hang. I don't want to buy time. I want to finish the guy. And that's what I'm looking for. The way I see that fight's going, or I'm going to knock him out, or I'm going to submit him. And that was the strategy on the first time. Now I have more time to plan, to prepare, to get better. Got very strong to that division right now. We're still in my speed. And I believe I'm going to bring a lot of danger to this fight.
What was it like for you watching the Masvidal fight? I mean, was that torture, or were you scouting? I mean, what was the feeling like?
That was painful, I think. The two painful moments that I had on 2020 was Hunter called me saying they got positive, and they sending a guy to test me again. And after a couple of hours, he confirmed that I was positive again, and all my coaches were positive. That was the worst news. And the second one was when Max Holloway fight was over and I saw Masvidal walking in instead of me. That hurt me a lot, you know. That was like, man, it's supposed to be me there right now. And then saw Kamaru getting freaking tired after the first round, and I was just like, man. And then I had a couple of whys. I was like, why? Like, why? But turned out that I got the fight. I got a lot of more time to get stronger, to get prepared, to get ready. And I do believe that right now I'm in a way better. The Gilbert Burns in February is way better than Gilbert Burns was last July. So it's okay. It is what it is. I think everything happened for a reason. I still don't know the reason. One day I will know the reason, but I do. I do believe it was for the better, and I believe I'm on a better shape right now.
Stylistically, it's a super interesting fight, right? So I'm curious, I mean, do you think he'll wrestle with you? Do you think he'll be willing to try? I mean, that's such a great part of his game, but it would seem like a very risky move against you. So do you think he'll wrestle?
I hope so. And I do think we're going to wrestle. We're going to grapple. You're going to the cage. You're going to strike. I don't think he's afraid of me. I'm not afraid of him either. And it's going to be a battle, and I'm looking forward to it. But I do hope we grapple a lot and we wrestle. I want to wrestle. He's a restless wrestler. I want to wrestle with him.
The last thing for me, I mean, we think about your beginning, right? Your dad, you know, exchanging for Brazilian jiu-jitsu lessons, and now you're here fighting for a UFC world title. What would it mean to you and to your family for you to get this world title?
It will mean the world for me. It will be a confirmation of my parents, my dad, making the tough but the right decisions at the right time, and me conquering that UFC world title will mean a lot. And then I got it. The way I see, I said that multiple times, not only for me, you know, it's for me for sure, because I do what I love. I do what I want. I want to be the champion. I don't have to be, but I want it to be. And I do that for me first, because I like to fight. I love to fight. That's what I love to be, is inside the octagon. But I do for my family as well, for my team, for the whole Brazilian fans, the Brazilian nation. They're suffering so much right now with COVID as the rest of the world. And I want to be a good hope for these guys. You know, see, they know from my beginnings, from where I came from, you know. And I'm here right now on that big stage. So I want to show to everyone in Brazil that if I made it, you know, they can make it too. Because It wasn't easy. I had a lot of ups and downs, but it wasn't ever impossible. I always believed in myself. I had a lot of good mentors on my, you know, my whole journey, on my whole career. I have a great coach, got great fighters behind me, great a lot of great person, and I made it, you know. And then I just want to make that very clear in Brazil, because if I could make, why not, you know? And then I want to be that big hope from Brazil, and it's not only for me, for sure it's for me, but it's for a lot of more people. So it means the world for me to be able to give it back for my parents and for a lot of person in Brazil. So I'm very looking for them, super hungry. Hope everything goes okay these couple next days, and Saturday night you guys see a new king, a new champion.
Gilbert, in your mind, why did you think this fight took so long to happen?
A lot of things happened in between, to be honest. The first thing that my manager Ali Abdelaziz in the UFC approached me was for November 21st. And I heard, not sure, that Kamaru needs to do a steam cell, he needs to get better. So, and then they said, oh, December 12th. But then I know a lot of guys that he trains with in Florida, and the guys say, oh, he's saying he's not fighting December, even before the UFC confirmed that. They said, oh, he's not fighting. He's training, but he's not training, you know. And I kind of knew, I said, man, it's not going to be December. And then I was just like, phew. And then they said January. But then I heard Conor ask for that date on January. So it ended up being February. So I don't think he was physically ready, and I know him pretty well. I know Kamaru Usman gets so many injuries that he needs to take care. And the Conor McGregor fight, so I don't think he was avoiding me, but I think it was, you know, a lot of things that was happening.
He left your team and your former coaches, and he's been pretty cool about it, but he recently started saying, oh, I need to show the junior guy that he can't beat the varsity guy, and these coaches are telling him that he can beat me, and he can't really. Do you think maybe as the fight's getting closer, he's starting to get a little bit annoyed about the situation?
To be honest with you, I don't care what he feels, but I do believe he's a little, you know, he still had a little feelings with the coach, with everything. And I just hope they, you know, they close that capture, they close that phase of their life good. You know, the coach ended up good, and he's been good, happy with his, you know, with his choice, and it is what it is. I think he's a little bit like, you know, when you finish that relationship and you're not in peace. I do believe he's a little bit on that stage, but I hope they finally close that capture and go to the next one, you know.
I like you just said, you want them to be better off, but yes. And part of you, does that not think, well, maybe there's an advantage for me if he looks in my corner and sees his old coaches, hey, I could have just that little percent advantage?
To be honest, as soon as you get right there in the octagon close, he's a champion for a reason. I do believe he's very strong mentally, so do I. And I think it's going to be a lot of mental battle, and I'm looking forward so much to that. And I don't think that's going to play I don't think that's going to play too much on his against him, you know. But I just do believe when you got a deep down, dig deep on that fight, because I do believe we're going to hit the wall by second round, maybe third round. We're going to hit that wall. I will and he will too. And if you watch a lot of fights, the Colby Covington fight and a lot of fights, he hit that wall sometimes on the beginning. And then if you saw, he was with the open eyes looking at the coach. And Henry was the one, hey, you're doing good, relax. You know, keep doing what you're doing. But Henry's not going to be there this time, not for him, not for me. So let's see who's going to dig deep and see who really wants, because I'm freaking hungry right here. I want to win that title, whatever it takes. I said multiple times, whatever it takes, I'm willing to die right there. I want to become a champion. It's not, I don't have to, but I want to. And we'll see when it's time to dig. He said multiple times he can dig so deep. So let's dig. I'm ready to.
I know you said it was even most of the time in your sparring, but if there's one thing you can remember that you can take away being like, I know in this area I haven't beat from those spars together, what is it?
I know I can submit him anywhere, anytime, in the bottom, on the top, in the cage, anywhere. He knows I can submit him. He might watch out for this, because he knows. Like he said, oh, people know who's going to win. He said, yeah, they know. Yeah, he knows. He knows you.
last thing for me, you just mentioned about all the media stuff. Seeing how nervous you are about this fight actually happening, is it talking about it making it worse? Like every day you're going, oh my God?
To be honest, I like it. Here right now, I like your guys' question, but a couple questions was just same questions, and I hang up with one guy, and they come to the next guy, and they do exactly the same questions, and I was just like, that was a little annoying, but I tried to, you know, I like to show a little bit my personality, I you know, my who I am, my training. I just try to still, even sometimes I get a little annoying with a couple questions, not yours exactly, but I still trying to, you know, give the best out of me, you know.
Well, if you become champion, you're going to get asked annoying questions like every week, so.
I cannot wait for that.
All right, that was Gilbert Burns. People have no idea what was happening while that was playing. It's probably best they don't. If you thought we were off the rails before that audio, you should have heard what was happening while the audio was playing. All right, that was Gilbert Burns. Okay, listen, you know, you heard some of the quotes in there as you said, oh, he knows. But I want to go back to what you said, Oscar, right before, because it's the exact same position that I find myself in this fight. I am excited for the stylistic matchup because I believe everything that Gilbert Burns does is potentially dangerous for Kamaru Usman. But I'm still picking Kamaru Usman. Like, I still have so much respect for the way he handles himself, the way he executes, the fighter that he is, that I feel like he's the right call. But I see all the potential in the underdog.
Well, it's like we've reached a point now where the man has established himself so much that you can't really write him off, you know? So Kamaru is now, he's reached a point of, not to say his legacy is the same as GSP, but he's reached a point where it's like, well, if you pick against him, you're just being foolish, you know?
Right.
He's proven himself, whether you like his style or not, you know, he's proven he has a style to beat a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I think the thing that intrigues me most about this fight is that, like you said, Gilbert Burns, every single area of the fight, I think, well, fuck, Gilbert might have him there. Oh, Gilbert might have him there. And it's kind of weird that even though I can say that about, like, the clinch, Gilbert might have him there, the wrestling, Gilbert might have him, you know, it's weird that I can still come out of that and be like, but Kamaru will logically win. And maybe that's because we're just used to seeing Kamaru's hand in the air. We spoke the other day at the media day, John, where it was like, if I look at the welterweight division right now, man, it's a tough one to see who beats Kamaru. If I was going to pick anyone, it's Gilbert Burns.
It's Gilbert Burns.
Now, I can see a lot of guys potentially beating Gilbert Burns.
Right.
I can't.
So weird, right?
It's just that beautiful mixture of MMA.
That's why I'm so intrigued by this. I think if you were just saying, like, who's the better fighter? Usman's the better fighter.
Yeah,
Usman's the better fighter. But who wins this matchup? It's the cliche. The styles make fights. This is the perfect example of that cliche of styles make fights.
And I think it's supremely interesting. And I think, you know, again, doing our thing of looking back into, do you know, I had like three more sips while we were off air listening to the audio, and it's just hit me like a fucking ton of bricks. But anyway, if you look at the two of them, I felt that Kamaru's quote unquote energy.
Right.
It's very much the champion versus the young, aggressive challenger.
Right, right.
I think Gilbert Burns is going to come out like he's going to come out like a hound out of hell, and I'm very interested in seeing not just the fight itself, but I believe the first 3 minutes. I think Gilbert's going to come at him very aggressively, and Kamaru is the sort of guy who, even in the Colby fight, he wants to dictate his pace. He wants to He wants to let it know. Let's not forget. We'll say what we want about the whole performance. Masvidal won the first round.
He did. He looked amazing the first round. He came out that first round. I thought, ooh, whoa.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And then he was breathing heavy on the spool.
Yeah.
Still. But I think if Gilbert comes out really aggressively, we could have a very interesting fight.
Yep. So are you saying that Usman went out there with only 30% energy?
Oh, wow.
Man, we got to bring up the past and throw it against people.
Is that what you were inferring?
You know what, though? I do think that was that kind of respect. The vibe that they had was like, Usman's like, oh, this kid has no idea what he's getting into right now. You know, like that was kind of the vibe that he was giving off.
The media day.
Yeah.
See, I don't know. I had it different. I thought.
No, I'm saying the Usman was carrying himself as that champion.
The
you know champion. What I mean?
You're right. There is something about the champion.
I don't mean that Kamaru was like, oh, this kid. I just felt he was like, you know, maybe I'm buying into it too much. I felt that when they talked about sparring, Kamara was like, "Yeah, he got the better of me like then, but now it's different." I don't know. I'm gonna buy into the Burns hype and pick Usman.
I think they were both very they complimented each other both about it. They neither one of them wanted to be like, "Oh man, I had the best of them. I had the best of them." Both of them were humble enough to say that they both had their times, which I thought was pretty good. Because you could tell that there's still a lot of respect there. But I can see where Usman, you know, and it's not that it's a matter of, like, a lack of hunger or a lack of drive, but there is something about once somebody becomes a champ and it sits there for a little bit, there's a sense of sort of, not that maturity is the right word, but it's like there's a point where they know to talk this shit, and there's a point where it's like, you know, where they're always like, "Oh my, I'm gonna go in there and I'm just gonna knock this guy out." It feels like there's a point where they just kind of become comfortable and they just, you know, are not like, they're just at ease with themselves.
I understand
that,
but for me, I thought that one thing that was quite compelling was when I asked Gilbert about, why is this fight taking so long? He was like, "Well, you know, I know a lot of people around him and they said he was training, but not training. And he's like, "I don't know him and he has a lot of injuries and stuff." I was like, "Man, is Kamaru like, more fucked, like physically, like messed up than we realized?" Like that to me was the takeaway I got from both of them. Because Gilbert was like, "Oh, I know he needs to take a lot of time off," and then Kamaru came up and was like, "Well, my body." Well, I'm like, "Dude, are you like messed up?"
Yeah. Right, here's another X factor.
Because you don't look it, you shredded Peter.
Yeah, right. What about the Henry Hooft factor? Right, like I respect it, and listen, I have a lot of respect for Henry Hooft, man. He is a fantastic coach, and I actually respect that he's kind of sticking to his guns here and saying, "Look, I said I wasn't going to be a part
of
this
fight today.
He's doing the right thing. He's absolutely doing the right thing." But Usman has already made it clear, like, "I'm not going back there." Like he's I left, and you know, he told me this. He said, "Look," because I asked him directly. I'm like, "Was it just this fight that caused you to leave?" And he was like, "Not really." He's like, "You know, I was kind of ready for a move and ready for a change, ready for something different, you know." And he's done now. He's not going back. So, I mean, doesn't the fact that he's not going back, wouldn't that give Henry the right to step back in and say,
corner? I think it gives him the right, but there's something with – I think there's a code, or there's a level of respect, or there's a level of understanding or love between, like, a teacher and a prime student or a coach and his athlete, to the point where, in his mind, where he's going and he sees that two people that he cared – or still probably cares very deeply for, are going to go in there, and the last thing that he wants to do is affect that overall, the energy of that night, the energy of that fight. Regardless,
I respect the hell out of him for doing
it. Yeah, I mean, I just
wonder if it'll affect Gilbert at all, where it's like, "Hey, man, I mean, once Usman said he's not coming back, like, can't you hop in my corner?"
I mean, I do like the way that Gilbert sort of addressed that, because there is that, you could tell he has the utmost respect for Henry. So then when Henry was like, "I can't do this," he's like, "I respect that, you know." And it does hurt him in the sense that Henry has an incredible mind that I would want, that if I was down and out and I'm like, "Dude, I need some answers. Tell me what I'm doing wrong." I would want Henry there.
Yeah.
But in that same sense, all the work's been done at this point. He knows what he needs to do, you know. So if you know that the only thing that you're like, "Man, if I get in a pinch, you know, I'd really want Henry to there." Don't get in a pinch.
Didn't Gilbert say it himself? Like, "Oh, you know, Kamaru's been sort of rattled in the first round, and it's been Henry to calm him down in between." And he's like, "Henry's not there anymore." Just because Henry's not in Gilbert's corner doesn't mean that Henry's suddenly in Usman's corner.
Right.
You know, so
I just wonder if it'll play any factor. I mean, I guess it was the plan the first time around, so it's still the plan the second time around. But once Usman makes it clear, like, if he's stepping out only for one camp because we're not, you know what I mean? Like, I get that. But when he's made it clear he's not going back, and again, this is not a knock on Henry. If anything, it's like, man, I have so much respect for Henry.
I agree. It's the right move to do.
It's the right move. I just wonder, I mean, to me, he has a free pass to jump back in the corner if he wants, but he didn't. But I just wonder if it will have
unless
any
impact
on
the
fight.
Unless he does it on Fight Night. He's like, look at me, bitch, here I am!
Or they FaceTime him in like they had Mike Brown and Abu Dhabi. Remember? That was so
no,
great.
He does the Stephen Bonner mask and he pulls his mask off or whatever.
No, I respect him for pulling himself out of it. And I think both fighters, I mean, they had their time. They had a relationship with him. But Gilbert doesn't need him in his corner. It hurts him that he's not there because, like you said, if you're in a pinch.
Again, how much are we putting on the cornerman? Like, isn't the fight's the fight? You know?
The fighters are the fight, but, I mean, who doesn't, whenever, especially when you get in a clinch, when you're in a clinch and you're sort of locked up and you're at a stalemate, the fighters do two things. They look up at the screen to see if they get an inclination of what they can't see on the backside of the fighter.
How can I work
out of it? They look at the time. Or they look over at their coach.
Yeah, well,
tell me how to get out of this pickle.
When I fight,
I mean, that's what I did last time I was there.
You know?
But I mean, I love the amount of respect and the fact that Gilbert even addressed that and was like, you know, I respect Henry for what he's saying, and it bodes well for a coach to have that much respect for a current or a former training partner and tutelage to be like, I'm too close to this situation. I love you both. I need to step away.
It's all right, mate.
That's a good coach to have.
Dude,
that's a good person.
Well, that's why he's so respected in the industry. Because he makes decisions like this. I completely agree.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Even if he's not the most out front coach, you know, in terms of like visibility, like he is, man. He is so well respected.
That's another sign of a good coach. When a guy's like, I don't need. It's not about me.
Right.
Yeah. Here's my guys, but I'm gonna be right here in the back, and if you want to come, because he has never ever turned down an interview. How many times did we go to the Black Zillions gym to do interviews, and they're like, come on in.
Yep.
We're not hiding anything.
Whatever you want, come on in.
Whatever you want to see, like we're an open book. This is what it is, and they'd work, and they did it for hours and hours, and like, Henry, can I still grab you for an interview? Of course.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you want? I mean,
dude,
I have the utmost respect for what he has done, his team, and the way that he runs things, and that's why dudes have followed him. And he goes, I'm leaving this gym, guy. I'm going elsewhere. We're gonna do this. We're gonna start something new.
I'm rolling with you.
They're like, oh, cool. We're part of the family, you know. So that's family has always been a big thing for those guys, especially the way that Henry runs his teams and he runs his camp. That is a family. So you might not be part of the family right now, but you're always part of the family. So I respect when he's like, even though that there is possibility he's never going to come back, he's still part of the family.
It's cool.
And they'll always have respect.
No, he's dead to them now.
Listen, I'm intrigued by this main event. I'm excited for it. I cannot wait for this fight for all the reasons we talked about. Let's get into the co-main real quick. Macy Barber versus Alexa Grasso. It's interesting, right, because I think Kamaru Usman is a fighter that doesn't get the respect that he probably deserves. I think Macy Barber is a fighter that probably gets more hate than she actually deserves.
Yeah.
I understand why the young, you know, if you want to say cocky,
well,
I guess.
Listen, John, if you look at me, it's the same thing. It's like young, handsome, beautiful
taking over
people,
the world.
Beautiful people.
Everybody thinks next
award
big thing.
Nominated.
Yeah. People hate on success.
Everybody goes, clearly this is the next superstar. It does. The parallels are endless. All right, let's do this. We did have a chance to talk to Macy Barber. It was the first time I had spoken to her since, of course, the loss to Roxanne Modafferi, and of course the knee injury and everything that she had to do, and the coming back from that. She's changed gyms. She's done a lot of things. So I had a chance to talk to her. Oscar was there as well, but I'll just play a little bit.
I don't care about that part.
Yeah. But fuck his bit.
I mean, you already know that they're basically the same person anyway, so you can't.
Do you know, I can't believe I'm saying this on podcast. Every time I interview Macy Barber, I'm like, annoyed she doesn't give me more attention because I got an English accent. I'm like, she should find me more attractive than she does, and she just never does. She never does.
Ask to take her on a date.
We have gone
off the rails. It pisses me off. It's like, look at me.
The accent is supposed to be magnetic. All right,
come on.
As shocking as that is, let's hear from Macy Barber. Let everybody make their own judgment, and then we'll talk about kind of what we took out of this part of the conversation.
Macy, obviously it's been a year away, right? So I guess what's the emotion, the energy like right now being back? I mean, I know it's a different world now, but you're back on a fight week.
At first it was a little bit surreal. Just being able to say, you know, I'm coming into a fight week, it's a little bit crazy just because, you know, it has been a year. So I forgot all those feelings, but at the same time it's like, dang, just yesterday I was here and it feels like I'm right back where I belong. So I'm excited. You know, there's a lot of good emotions coming into this fight, and there's been a lot of hard work put in this last year, so I'm ready to show it off.
I was going to ask you, I mean, for this past year, what was the hardest part? I mean, was it the physical recovery of getting over it, or was there, like, some mental challenges that maybe you didn't realize you were going to have to deal with along the way?
You know, I think there was a lot just because of I had the injury, and then I had surgery, and then we ran into the COVID and the quarantine and a lot of different things and a lot of different factors. For me, you know, just as a fighter and as an athlete, being taken out of the gym and out of, like, training, that's hard because I went from being 3 years old and training my entire life, being an athlete, being active, to, okay, now you're out. You can't even walk unless you're on crutches and you have a brace and you can't do anything physical for a while. It was like, what do I do? Like, what am I supposed to do with myself? So it was a little bit challenging at first. But then after that, you know, it was easier because as I got healthier, it was more physical therapy. So I had more distractions. You know, I was able to go to therapy 2-3 times a day for a couple hours a day. It was like just obsessing yourself with becoming stronger and better and just healthy again and getting back to being able to train. And then after that, I was able to train and start striking and then wrestling and grappling. So overall, the recovery has been good. But obviously, we all ran into some hiccups with quarantine, and it wasn't just hard on me. It was hard on a lot of people. So I think the added challenge of for everybody of trying to figure out what to do with your life and how to adjust to the changes, I think that didn't just teach me a lot of lessons, but it taught everybody lessons.
Yeah, I don't know how much you let yourself soak it in, but there was a lot of fan backlash after the last fight. And I'm just curious if you did see it, and if so, I mean, was it upsetting to see some of the stuff that was out there?
You know, I try not to pay too much attention because deep down, you know, I knew that I was prepared to go into a fight. And when you sign on the line to fight, you know that you're saying, hey, I'm ready to go get into an octagon with another human and get locked in this cage, and one of us is going to go down. And I suffered an injury, and I suffered a very bad one, you know, and I still am going to fight through it. And people on the outside, they're always going to have something to say, you know, whether it's good or bad. The thing that matters is they have something to say, you know, they have an opinion on it. And that's what matters, because I want people to be able to have an opinion, whether it's good or negative. So I didn't really care if it was good or bad. I was just like, hey, they're commenting, so we're good.
Fair enough. Is the countdown still on the phone, or did the year off, you know, throw a wrench in the plans?
The countdown's still going. I did get an iPhone, though, so now it's a little bit different because you can't have, like, the little thing on your screen. But it's still there. And January 18th of 2022 is when that's, like, the end date for me to be 23 years and 8 months. So I turned 23 in May, and we're still going towards that title.
That's awesome. I'm curious. I mean, obviously, to have that kind of drive and that focus, it's key, right? But do you regret ever that, like, became public? Like, do you wish maybe, like, Only you knew what that countdown was there and what was going on?
No, if you keep your goals and your ambitions hidden, it just means you're not confident in them. And I'm confident in my goals and my ambitions and my dreams, you know, and I'm always going to speak it out. I said this on another interview, is like, I've mentioned it a couple of times. People say your confidence is perceived as cockiness. And I'm like, if you feel that you're confident in something, you should be able to speak it out. You should be able to say it, you know, because you want everybody to know, because that just keeps you accountable. That keeps you going towards that. And I want people to be able to follow that dream. You know, that gives other people something to follow. And I want that. You know, I don't want to just keep things to myself, because if I keep it to myself, not everybody's going to benefit from it. So I want everybody to benefit from the story, from the challenge, to be able to follow. It's almost like they're able to be a part of it, you know. And I want everybody to be a part of my career, because what fun is doing things alone? It's not. So I want to share with as many people as possible.
Very cool. Certainly not an easy matchup in your return here, right? Obviously an accomplished fighter, and Alexa, great, great striker. What did you think when they handed you this matchup? What was your initial reaction?
The initial reaction was say yes, because we've never turned down a fight. She's tough. You know, she's a great fighter, and she's strong. She's got a great following behind her. I have a great following behind me. I think it's a great fight. There's going to be a lot of eyes. We're co-main event, you know. We have a great fight ahead of us, and I'm super excited for it, and I'm ready to go out there and get a finish.
What's the team going to be in the corner? I know you've kind of changed things around a little bit, so who's going to be in the corner?
Yeah, so we had a little bit of a change-up. I went from Milwaukee to Chicago, and I'm now working with Mike Valley and Izzy Martinez. Unfortunately, Izzy tested positive for COVID a couple weeks ago, something like that, and so we had a quick change of direction, and now I have Jafari in my corner. He's like the fill-in wrestling coach, we're good. So we got wrestling, we got Mike Valley, and then my brother's in my corner as well. But my team and my training has been phenomenal this camp, and I'm excited.
Very nice. Last thing for me, obviously 2020 didn't work out the way you wanted it to, but what are the goals in 2021? I mean, do you feel like you need to make up for lost time? I know you said you're still chasing that title, so do you feel like you got to fight frequently? What's the goal?
Well, first of all, I want to say that 2020 went exactly how it was supposed to be. It may not have been beautiful the whole time, but there was a lot of lessons, a lot of growth, and a lot of things that I am so thankful for. You know, I'm glad I got the injury, you know, because it taught me a lot, and I need to be the fighter that is super well-rounded and just knowing how to be prepared everywhere. And I want to be prepared even for an injury, even for adversity, and I want that. So 2020 went exactly how it was supposed to, and we overcame that year, and 2021 has been great to start, and I see it going with me getting this win over Alexa. I've already said that I wanted to fight Joanne Calderwood, and then I wanted the title fight. You know, that's how I see the path going, and I already told Dana, and he gave me the thumbs up and was like, all right, let's do it kind of thing, but we'll see. You know, obviously everything happens the way it's supposed to happen, and we just come prepared, and we're ready to show what we need to show.
All right, so listen, I understand people have very strong feelings about Macy Barber. I want to say this. I'll throw out my thoughts, and then Oscar, I'll let you chime in on what you felt. I will say this. I love the fact that she still says, you know, look, I don't regret that I let it be known this is what I wanted for myself. I still am chasing that dream of being the youngest champion ever. Obviously, this lost year and the loss is going to make that incredibly hard for her to accomplish, but she still sees a path to get there. And I know after my question's finished, you know, you kind of went into the fact that she wants to fight Joanne Calderwood, and, you know, she thinks that, hey, if I win this, and then I could maybe headline with Joanne Calderwood, and then maybe I could get a title fight. I mean, listen, it's an uphill battle, but I respect the fact that she has that confidence. I really, really do. Here's what I did find interesting is that, you know, when we talked about the loss, she talks about the injury, not the loss as much.
Right.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yeah, yes.
And I thought that was interesting. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that she learned the lesson. I mean, a very, very important figure in the industry wrote a book called Win or Learn. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but the name is escaping me right now, but I just remember it was a very... oh, that was so great when Kavanaugh did that at the media day in Abu Dhabi. But no.
The most cheerful he's ever been, by the way.
Oh, that was phenomenal. That interview was great, but it was funny how he plugged his book. And by the way, it's a good book. If you haven't read Win or Learn, you should. It is actually a very entertaining book.
I did. No, I liked it. You didn't? I thought it was good.
Of course I liked it.
I'm not plugging. I mean, it's like you're making a face that you think I'm being silly. Like I'm just making up. Like I liked it.
Anyway, Macy Barber.
Yeah. Macy Barber. I just hope that she really did learn the lessons that were there.
Well, see, I don't think she did.
That's what I'm afraid. And that's why I think that if Alexa Grasso can pressure her early and get her maybe in her own head a little bit of like, oh, man, are we picking up right where I left off?
See, if I was Alexa Grasso, I'd be spamming fucking kicks to that leg.
Yeah.
I would be nailing that area of the leg as hard as I could as straight away. And I think Macy, it's interesting you said that because Macy is almost like a politician in her interviews where she's charismatic, but she has a statement to make, and she comes up there to make the statement she wants to tell.
Right.
And I found it very interesting, like you said, she accepted the injury, but not the loss. And obviously, after her loss, everyone remembers her dad going fucking insane and saying that,
sure,
you know, his daughter was Jesus or something. I can't remember. But I found it interesting as well that she didn't seem to commit to the loss. She committed to the, well, I got hurt, and then I was out. You know, it's like... You also got beaten.
And listen, I don't want to take away from the fact that
she's
22. Fair to say,
she's 22.
She is very young. Like I've always said that about her too. Like if people have been interviewing me,
she's
at that
like
age,
10 years older than Kenny. Like
I'd say some silly stuff, but wow, that just I mean
shame
so off the rails.
Sorry,
I can't even think anymore. I can't even think anymore. But no,
I like all ages.
But no, Jesus. Is it too late to start over? Can we start over?
He started, John.
It's
he
his fault.
It, yeah.
No, but the thing is, it's not that you don't get to mention the injury. You know what I mean? Like obviously, the injury probably did, you know, contribute significantly to her performance
course,
in that fight.
But she never specified anything. She didn't even mention Roxy. Right?
Exactly.
She literally went, "I had an injury and I was put out." I think Macy is. I'm not a Macy hater. I really enjoy Macy. The only time I sort of got off the Macy train was when she was like, "Well, you know, I have the countdown clock so people can join me on this journey." It's like, listen, I don't know if you know how much people like value. Like, I think people want to watch you fail, not watch you break this.
I hate that though.
I hate that too. But don't you think that there's a role in that too? And she was so close to embracing that role. Like, oh, you all want to see me fail, and I'm not going to let you see me fail.
Right.
I thought she was so close there on the Conor card. At 2:46, I think when she came back today or yesterday, she's so charismatic, it's undeniable.
Yep.
She really is. I saw some fighting fundamental flaws with her in her performances, like her head stays right in the middle.
Yes, it does.
But she's a character. And again, what do we want in this sport? We want characters who aren't professional wrestlers.
Right.
I want characters who are just eccentric. I don't want characters who are over the top, like doing characters, you know, maybe wearing red fucking hats or whatever. I want people
As much as I love Colby Covington behind the scenes, and I do. I love Colby Covington behind the scenes. I hate his character.
His shtick.
I hate it.
I don't want a shtick. I want a flamboyant person.
Yeah.
And she's there, man. She's right there.
And she has skill, man. She really does. Which is funny.
Dude, fair fucks to her. She's already worked out a title shot.
Yeah.
Convincing JoJo to take that fight? I don't know. But
we'll see how she performs in this one. I will say Alexa Grasso is one of my favorite female fighters to watch fight, man. Her boxing is so crisp, man. Her, Irene Aldana as well, obviously her teammate, they both have so you know, great boxing. I love watching them fight. So I'm interested to see how this plays out because I think Grasso could just box her ears off. You know what I'm saying? I think she really could if she wants to, but
she could look at a wrestle.
Exactly. Yeah. She could also get grinded down real quick. All right, feature fight in this one, Kelvin Gastelum versus Ian Heinisch. Quickly, guys, I mean, dude, I hate to say crossroads fight for Kelvin Gastelum, but, man, when you think about the results and kind of where he's been, he's on this losing streak, I think this is an important fight. And you know, Kelvin Gastelum, obviously, you know, fight of the year against Israel Adesanya, no faults there. Flat in the loss to Darren Till, shocking in the loss to Jack Hermanson, but, you know, you get caught on a heel
Jack
hook or whatever.
Who?
Hermanson. Sometimes I mispronounce it. I said Hermanson forever.
Hermanson?
I said Hermanson forever, and then I was like, oh, it's Hermanson.
Hermanson?
Yeah, sometimes I do that. I still say Abby.
Kenny, I brought you in to be like, okay, you bring some structure back to the podcast. I tapped him. For the listeners, I tapped him on the shoulder.
Instead,
I was like, okay, you get it. And he comes in, and he's
accused
you of saying shit.
I mean, dude, like, Abby Simon called me on it one time. Like, I still say Thiago Alves to this day because that's the way we –
yeah, that was – because
that's the way
the
we
first.
Said
yeah.
it to the – like, in Thiago the beginning.
Thiago Alves?
Yeah.
You fuckers need to learn English. Jesus.
But that's the way we said it.
The Queen's English or nothing else.
Is it too late to start over? I'm trying to think. If we started over now, we got weigh-ins in the morning, but we could still.
Jeez, we have weigh-ins in the morning at 6:30, and I feel like 18 years of my life have been drained.
All right, so real quick, let's talk about this fight. Because, listen, I think this is a key fight. Because, again, all right, Israel Adesanya, Darren Till, Jack Hermanson, before that, Ronaldo Souza, Michael Bisping, Chris Weidman, Vitor Belfort, even go to Tim Kennedy, Johnny Hendricks, Neil Magny, Nate Marquardt, Tyron Woodley, Jake Ellenberger. If you don't know what I just read, that is consecutively the people that Kelvin Gastelum has fought.
Are you fucking serious?
Tell me that is not, I mean.
That's a who's. Dude, that is probably the most murderous row of fighters I've ever heard in my
murderous
life.
Murderous row, man. That is unbelievable. So then you see Ian Heinisch, and I'm not trying to disrespect Ian Heinisch. Dangerous. No, I mean, listen. Dangerous. The guy is dangerous, man. The guy is dangerous. But he doesn't have that, you know, the level of accomplishments of any of those fighters. So I just think this is such an important moment for Kelvin Gastelum. Like, you got to win this fight, right? You got to win this fight.
I mean, even outside the fact of it's three losses. You know, like, we've seen guys like Yoel Romero, who are absolute beasts, you know, reach a point where at some point the UFC is like, is this the time where he's still good enough that we can get top value to give him to another organization? That is where Kelvin's at, unfortunately, should he lose this fight. I mean, even if he wins, there's no guarantee. I mean, like, Kelvin's been around, but I could see where Kelvin's one of these guys that Dana and these guys are looking. They're like, all right, let's look at the last three guys he's fought. He fought the champ, and it was one hell of a fight. But then it was like Darren Till. Okay, Darren Till was a good fight, but Darren's not at the top of the division.
Right.
He's not the top.
And Kelvin was flat in that fight.
You know,
no
and that's the thing. I mean, like, this fight is one of those ones where he needs to have the utmost incredible performance. And even then, it's still no guarantee that the UFC keeps him around. It's unfortunate. Some of these guys, and when we've seen these roster cuts, he's at the position right now where he needs to still show that he is a contender for the title. Every fight that he doesn't, he becomes more of a economic liability the UFC. And it sucks to say it, but that's the reality of things. Like, it's not like he goes to every press conference. That's not like he goes to everything and everybody's like, oh my God, that Kelvin content is the best. But then, like, even for us, he was a little flat when he started the interview. I mean, it was...
But don't you think that, as crazy as it is, and this is just the market machine, if Ian Heinisch beats Kelvin, right... Yeah. In 2 weeks, who gets more views? An Ian Heinisch interview or a Kelvin interview? Probably still the Kelvin interview.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But he has that name recognition from from one performance in the Izzy fight. It's hard because he's so young. It's hard for them to let him go.
I don't think this is do or die, but this is
in terms of career. In
yes.
terms of like what can I achieve as an athlete? Yeah, if you're not being Ian Heinisch. All respect to Ian Heinisch. If you're not beating Ian Heinisch and you were fighting for the title, interim title last year, if you're not beating this fight, that's you done, man.
It's hard to keep upselling somebody with four losses.
Yeah.
Because then you reach the point. They've already established this whole, like, three losses and you're gone sort of deal. Like,
that's
so
then
you
out
start
of
getting,
though,
and then you start getting, but then you start getting people off to the side. Why is this guy still here?
Yeah, but you only get like four in a row or something if you're Anderson Silva. You know what I mean? You're
right.
Gonna be at the top, like at the very top. I mean, I don't think they cut Kelvin if he loses here. I don't.
He's not paid that much.
It's just I feel like it's an important
still,
moment.
Still, I mean, it's spilled with that, like the whole fact.
It's not out of the question.
Heinisch is like the if you want to think of like the new breed, especially like these contender cats.
But
the new breed means
the new athlete, not the new star, right? So like I just said, Ian Heinisch might fucking murder Kelvin. Doesn't mean he's the new middleweight.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, don't you think they've squeezed everything they can get out of Kelvin? And when they get four losses,
no, we can fucking
but if
make
you get
him
four
die
losses,
to someone else.
Yeah, but you get four losses. It's hard to kind of keep going back to the well, trying to tell people he's the next whatever. As much as I like Kelvin and I think he's a hell of a fighter, it's just tough to see them recycle a guy that's coming back in. And then at that point, it would be four losses.
This is an important night.
Because then at
this
that point, I mean, already the this fight right here is a fight that's sort of like, are you worth keeping around fight right here?
But realistically, John just hit it. It's an important night. It's more important than that. If Kelvin really wants to be a title contender ever again, all respect, he should smoke Ian Heinisch.
That's what I mean. And I'm not trying to disrespect Ian Heinisch.
It's more important.
If you're gonna be at that level, you're talking about championship level.
Yeah, if you're gonna be more important than just like one of the guys, you should be fucking murking a cunt. You know?
So who'd you guys pick on this one?
Ian Heinisch.
I don't remember who I picked in this one. I picked
Heinisch. I went Heinisch.
I think Heinisch will probably win too, man. I think Kelvin's at a fucked up place in his life.
Right. And that's the thing. The UFC is pretty good at finding guys when they can get and I'm not trying to sound like disconnected to the whole connection that, you know, we've Kelvin has given to us as to entertain us and be around for so long. But I think we've all start to realize at a certain point, the UFC finds they cut guys while they're still worth something.
Yeah.
They don't cut them after there's no value there. If Kelvin doesn't win this fight, and let alone win it in good fashion, if it's just sort of a, we went to a decision, people are like, wow, Kelvin still looked flat. Kelvin's job is in jeopardy.
I roll with the old dog. I roll with Kelvin Gastelum. So yep. we'll see how it plays out. All right, let's.
Not that I want that.
No, I
but,
know.
But
it's
so tough
I'm
right
telling
now.
You, that's why to me again this card. I understand.
Tough out here for a pimp.
I'm telling you, that's why I'm saying this card. Like, I understand why people might say this isn't worth $70. I get it, but I'm so intrigued by the main event. I'm intrigued by the co-main event. I'm intrigued by this fight right here because I feel like there's so much on the line, especially for Kelvin Gastelum. I feel like this is a career-defining type of night for him, man.
For both of them.
Yeah, for both of them.
If Ian gets this win, this is the win where people can't deny the fact that this guy is a talent. I mean, he's got such a crazy story in his own right. This is one of those fights that if he can go out there and get a win here, I mean – This is where his career literally goes
so
in a whole different trajectory.
Break your moment for sure.
For sure. So I mean, this could be the start of somebody's becoming a really really big prospect.
Yep.
And the possibility of somebody losing their career.
All right, a late addition to the card and a late bump to the main card: Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. anybody that listens to this show knows that Bobby Green is a roadshow favorite. If you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know that Bobby Green is a roadshow favorite. He solidified that position once again. Of course, we talked about him off the top at the virtual
the
media
best
day.
Virtual media day that's ever
already
been
gave the best virtual media day. But then the day prior, man, he gave us this interview, which I thought was phenomenal. Originally, as I was driving over here today to do this, I thought, you know what, I'm going to have to be sure to point out to folks that this is a not safe for work kind of interview. that if you've got kids around, or maybe you're listening out loud.
If you've been playing this at work anyway, you've already realized.
See, that's what I'm,
that's where I'm going with it. That's what I was thinking on the drive over here.
At the very beginning, John went, well, so-and-so said, thing, and I was like, oh, that's sad. And then I said, fuck, 10 seconds
yeah,
later.
Yeah,
I was like,
oh. Yeah,
and then I was humping their ears. So, yeah.
So that's what I was going to say. Now I'm just going to say, fuck it. I mean, you are you know what I mean? You're already fired. Yeah, you're already sitting in HR right now. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Don't play him this bit.
Here is Bobby Green proving to us once again why he is one of my absolute favorite all-time interviews in the sport.
Bobby, it's good to see you again, man. Talk about the last time out, man. I mean, I know that was a difficult result overall. Was it frustrating, you know, to see the win streak snapped and then also just the decision itself?
I know, bro. Don't even remind me. What is wrong with these judges? They're fired. I got twice as many numbers as him. I don't know how you saw that, but it is what it is. I'm so used to it, you know? We're in Black History Month. Let's have fun.
Well, I mean, are there any lessons you can take out? Because I know we always say, well, if you know, you win or you learn, right? You learn. But when it's something like that where you're pretty sure you won and then you didn't, I mean, is there anything you can take out of that and change, improve, adjust?
That's a great question, bro. I'm going to try to keep it real with you. Oh, shit. I don't know, bro. Like, with this shit, it's so crazy, bro. It's so crazy. I just got to take my lickings and keep it going, you know? I'm just a strong man. Like, y'all done broke my heart a few times, and hey, I'm right here. And I came back again, and I came back again. You can't break me, okay? I'll be here.
Fair enough. So then you get this matchup with a fellow veteran like yourself. Obviously, he's had more octagon walks than anybody. What did you think when they came to you with the name Jim Miller?
What did I think? Got just as much experience, maybe a little bit more. I thought, same thing I thought for Clay Guida. What can I give this guy that he hasn't seen before? They've seen everything. The best strikers, the best ground guys, wrestlers. What can you give them that's different? And Jim knows it. Jim said it best. He said, I'm unique. And that's the best compliment you can give a fighter, is that I've been working on my craft and my style. My style is unique, and you can't prepare for it. You can't figure out me. I'm going to switch it on the fly. I call myself like a quarterback. Like, I get out there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that was the game plan, but I'm throwing the whole game plan out. This is how he's fighting, and this is how we're going to fight. Like, my coach be like, man, I want you to move more. I'm like, nah, coach, He's standing in front of me. We got to go toes. So I call different plays according to the fight. You know, if that guy's fighting like this, I need to be able to go, oh, call an audible. Switch it up. We're not doing that. We're doing this. Yeah.
Is there an overall philosophy to your style? I mean, as you said, it's incredibly unique. It's incredibly entertaining. I mean, is there like an overriding philosophy to it?
Is there a philosophy to it? I just want to be remembered. I just want to be respected by my peers, you know? Like, I feel like all these cats be hating on me, like, and don't want to give me my shine, you know, just because of my record and what I deal with. But I feel like Dustin Poirier is the only guy to ever really beat me, you know? And I'm not going to go into that fight, but anyways, I just be doing me, bro. I'm having fun with this shit. I made almost $500,000 last year. I'm fucking on. Ain't nobody beat me right now. I'm fucking on.
What does drive you? You know, I mean, do you still dream of a world title, or is it
fuck no? I hate the burst out bubble because that's what every fucking fighter says. Like, oh, I want a world title. I want a world title. No, I'm trying to take care of all my family. You know, take care of my friends, have a great life. You know, have a little cash, a little nice car, a couple houses. I'm good. Y'all can have the game. I'm good. So let me pay my house off. Y'all can have this motherfucker. I enjoyed it. I brought my style. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, fuck you.
How long do you think you want to keep doing this? Because I feel like you have this kind of tortured relationship with MMA. Like, it's you're great at it, and you're very fun, and you're entertaining, but I also feel like sometimes you hate the
game.
They
hate me, yeah. It's a love-hate thing, you know? I hate this bitch sometimes. She loves me. She wakes me up sometimes. She gives me a little bit of love. And other days, she don't want to talk. We haven't had any conversations lately. Yeah, it's like a woman, you know? It is what it is. But you take your lickings and you try to make up. Babe, I'm sorry. Can we, you know? Oh, shit. I'm having so much fun.
So what, if you could pick one, a win that's kind of boring and nobody really remembers, or a loss and a fight of the night that people walk away saying, damn, did you see that Bobby Green fight last night? Which one do you take?
Come on, bro. That's not even a close thing. I'll take the loss. I'll keep it 100. Losses don't mean anything to me, bro. They don't mean anything. Like, you have to be there and understand what happened. And so the average geek or nerd sees your record and go, oh, you lost, and you lost. Like, nah, you wasn't there in that fight, bro. You don't know what really happened. And if you ain't paying attention, you're going to sleep on me, and I'm going to wake you up.
I think I know what kind of fight we're going to see, but what do you see when you play this thing out of your head? What kind of fight are we going to see on Saturday?
I've been playing a couple things in my head. Should I be more aggressive? Should I take my time and fill it out? There's so many different things. Like I said, it's a quarterback thing. I'm just going to get in there. And Jim will tell me. He'll tell me. He'll go, oh, I'm trying to do this. Okay, cool. Let's do that then.
Last thing for me, whose respect do you want most? I mean, when you fight for this, I mean, it's about paychecks for you, right? It's about, you say, taking care of your family. But
man,
do you want respect from the fans, or is it more about respect from your peers? What, I mean, how do you want to be remembered?
The fans are finicky, okay? The fans are finicky. Like, I like the diehards. I like the diehards. But as far as, like you said, the money and stuff, that is for the money in a way, yeah. I do, but the most important thing is that I could die and have my respect, you know? I still got fighters to tell me, who the fuck are you? And that I'm the worst fighter in the UFC division. I'm like, whoa, okay, interesting. I still haven't got my respect. But that's, like I said, the fans are finicky. I really want to do it for the guys like Joe Rogan. You know what I'm saying? The guys like Chael Sonnen, who's the head. As long as I get the respect from those guys, hey, I can lay it down. But until then, I'm going to keep going at it until I can say, hey, I got Joe Rogan say, that guy's good, you know? Until then, I'm going to keep going.
Bobby, you mentioned something there about losses, about the fans might think you lost, but they weren't in the fight. It sort of reminds me of something like Nate and Nick Diaz have said in the past, where
those are my dogs.
The record might say that you lost the fight, but being in there, you know you actually won, and the other guy knows who actually won the fight. Is that something that happens?
Yeah, Nate Diaz Army. Nick Diaz Army. All day. We all feel the same way, you know? Like, we got bullshit judges that don't really understand fighting, you know? They don't understand what we're doing and what's happening, what's an actual score and what's not a score, what's a good hit. You know, sometimes I got guys that are scoring, and when I'm blocking a kick and I hit it in my arm, but they score that as a kick. I guess so. Cool.
Jim Miller was out here earlier, and he says he thinks he's seen pretty much everything there is to say.
But I got a couple of tricks for Jim. I'm like, hey, you ain't seen this yet. I'm going to show you something different, buddy.
Well, that was my question. What tricks do you have that a guy like Jim hasn't seen yet?
I thought about that, like with Clay. So I was like, what can I do to Clay that's different? So Clay was trying to shoot in and like keep me against their cage. I think I hit him somewhere, and the crowd was like, hey, watch it. I was like, hey, I'm sorry, fucker. I put it in his ear, you know, just to kind of joke around with him. And he was like, he froze for a second, and he like, oh, okay. He just like, what the? Nobody's ever did that to me, you know? So I'm doing it.
Good stuff. Last one for me, $500,000. What was your biggest expenditure last year?
Oh, no, so don't just put that to my name. That's not what you get after taxes, okay? After taxes and this, after taxes and three baby mamas, because I got three, black, white, and Mexican, It went gone. It's already gone.
Which was the most expensive?
The most expensive thing I got?
No, out of the women.
Oh, man. No, that's, you don't even get into that. But then it's a competition. They're like, well, you spent that much on that one. You spent that much on that one. You don't love your son as much as these ones? I'm like, oh, I never can win. I can't win. I just try to do the best I can.
Listen, Bobby Green may not be for everybody, but he's for me. I love that guy, man. I'll tell you right now, that dude's interviews are the absolute best. He keeps it real. I just love the fact that, you know, right off the bat, it's like, nah, I'm not going for a title, man. You know, I'm just trying to get my houses paid off. And
I got three women.
Take care of the women. Listen, tough fight, but I love – now, this one's tough too, right, because Jim Miller, how do you not have respect for Jim Miller? Yeah. You know, I mean, you know – the dude has done it more than anybody else, more walks than anybody else, man. You got to respect the hell out of that. And, man, it seems like is like better now than he ever has been. It's crazy. He's at a great stage in his career.
Well, remember, too, for most of his career, he had the Lyme disease.
Battling
and he said
Lyme
after
disease.
That, he's like, I literally feel like my career has started over.
Started over.
Which is just unreal that a guy with that much experience and been doing it for so long felt like he was a brand new fighter.
It's crazy.
It was like when you hear some people and they're like, oh, I'm going to go train, but I'm going to wear weights when I go running. So when I take the weights off, you know, it feels like nothing. So he took the Lyme disease off. Yeah, he's been handicapped a good portion
of his
career.
That's a bit like me
career.
When I took the HPV off.
And you look like a totally different guy now. You get around, you're so much better, you're much more energy. You're so bad.
I'm sorry, man.
But no, but look at what has happened. And I'm so happy for him because, I mean, it couldn't come to a better guy.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a guy that we've always said is a good representative of the sport, I mean, it's Jim Miller. I mean,
he's a legend, man.
He
really, really
is. When you ask him questions,
37 trips to the cage, dude.
When you ask him questions, he's so coherent. He's like, well, the funny thing about that is, he's like, oh, yeah. I'm real.
I literally want to just hang out and, like, go fishing and, like, hang out and, like...
Doesn't he, like, brew his own beer and stuff?
He does, like, everything. Yeah. He's literally a good old boy. You know, I mean, he is... And it's incredible. I mean, to think that, you know, everything that he's went through and the fights that he's had, he still has a love for the sport. He has a – there's something about when you watch the interviews. There's one thing when it seems like a guy is just going through the motions. Oh, here's another interview. And you get that from a lot of fighters. But he still generally really seems like he is enjoying himself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, great on him. I mean, he
– 37 UFC fights
this,
later.
I mean – he is going to probably be the first person to hit 40 fights?
He'll be the first to hit 40. Cowboy and him both have 36 walks, right?
So
Miller gets to 37 this week. Obviously, we know Cowboy is supposed to get 37 with Diego, so they could go back and forth. But we don't know how much longer Cowboy is going to do it. Is he going to go to 40 or not?
I don't know. Dude, they have to fight for that.
Would that be something that's the 40th fight?
Of course.
Why would you not? 40th walk?
Come on, why would you not? Make the cunts fight.
That would be so hard to watch. That'd be a fun one to watch, but that'd be another one. It's like,
wait, harder than Cowboy versus Diego? You're having a laugh, mate. That's going to be a hard one to watch.
That's going to be a hard one to watch.
Diego's fucking nuts, though.
I can watch Diego. Yeah. I'll watch Diego anytime. But how about this? Jim Miller saying he wants to fight.
Diego.
Jim Miller saying he wants to fight at UFC 300. So he'd be the.
Yeah, that's what I'm about.
Fight at UFC 100, 200, 200, and 300. I mean, that is cool, man.
Yeah, no, dude. He needs to do it. They need to fish his corpse out and.
Even if he took like a year off or something like that, and
dude, get him back in there,
and then came back and do it.
Maybe if Dana knew his fucking timings right, he could leave 300 alone, and then Khabib come back for that.
I mean, he's so close that if he could race to get to the 40, if he can get that, I can see where he has to stay active, since there is somebody in the ballpark to get to the 40 first. But in terms of just being around and fighting on 300, that's very, very doable. Mm-hmm. If he pulls the schedule back, if he just maintains, it doesn't take a lot of damage.
But
that's
so
very, very doable.
But he's so coherent. He's not like some of the other veterans we know. He's also, you know, he's not going and namaste. You know, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's normal.
Hey, how great is he was talking about the way he's backing off his train now. He was saying that, like, he used to be so all about training all the time. Remember when he said if he was taking groceries from his truck to the house, he would do lunges to the house just so he was. I was like, holy shit.
That's why I park really close to my door here. So if I did lunges. I'm like, two lunges, I'm in the house.
I do the same thing. I do one lunge.
One lunge, bro.
Today I do the left leg, tomorrow I do the right leg.
Luckily, I only do trips to the supermarket like once every week. So.
The car phrases you do when you get the broccoli are just off the chain.
Off the chain.
Oh, man. So, listen, I'm excited for that fight as well. Main card kicks off with Julian Marquez versus Mikey Batola. Julian Marquez, a longtime Vegas guy who's now out in Kansas City with Glory MMA and Fitness, 31 months away as he comes back here. Of course, Mikey Batola, one of the coolest nicknames in the game, Coconut Bombs. You know he's coming out looking to fight. And listen, you go up and down this card. I mean, the prelims, I think there's some decent fights on there. I'm excited to see Rodolfo Vieira again. Absolutely, you know, insane submission artist against Anthony Hernandez. I did talk to Anthony Hernandez's team. They say, yeah, we promise we're not going to try to make this a jiu-jitsu match. We realize that would be very bad. Diego Lima versus Bilal Muhammad.
That was
a fight that I think could have slipped onto the main card. You know, I think they went with Marquez Patolo just because they realized a little propensity for violence to kick off that main card. But I think Lima and Muhammad, you know, could have been on there. But you
probably
have to,
should have been on there.
Well, and here's the thing. And I see people talk about it, and I actually did see a lot of fans that felt like, oh, that's disrespect for Bilal. Don't forget when they build these cards, you want to have something nice on ESPN, right? You want to have
– Yeah, cool.
You want to have a nice – I mean, ESPN's a nice platform as well. You know, not everybody's going to buy that $70
prelim, though?
It's not even the
it's
feature
not even
prelim.
The feature prelim.
It's not even the feature prelim.
Oh, well, shut up. I mean, even if they gave him the feature prelim, that's a main card fight right there.
I think it's
Diego Lima and Bilal Muhammad is – by no means a prelim fight.
I mean, relax, man. It's going to be
it's
fun.
It's on ESPN.
But you're
getting
to one of the good ones after this.
Well, I was going to say, I have a feeling Cole Coffey might have a slight interest in Mallory Martin versus Pollyanna Viana.
Fight of the night.
Which one do you want to shag?
Wow.
What? I don't want to shag either.
He's talking about the level of athletes. What's wrong with you?
These are just fine.
You're cut off, dude.
Athletes.
Okay.
You're cut off. We're talking about the quality of athletes here.
Obviously.
Andre Uwe versus Chris Gutierrez in a 140-pound catchweight fight kicks things off. And here's another one that I thought was really interesting down on the early prelims. Brian Kelleher versus Ricky Simone. I thought that could have featured on either ESPN.
That could have been a
– or even on the main card.
You're right.
Even on the main card.
Like, that fight right there – if it wasn't on the main card, easily could be the feature prelim.
I agree.
Easily. I would have took the Diego Lima, Bilal Muhammad. No offense to Marquez Batolo. I would have easily taken the Lima Muhammad in the main event. And Kelleher Simone could have been the feature prelim.
Yep, I agree. Gabe Green versus Phil Rowe and Miranda Maverick versus one of our other all-time favorites here at the Roadshow, Jillian Robertson. She's so funny, man. Just
she is
a
so
big smile,
awesome.
Laughs after everything she says.
I think Polly and Van and Mallory Martin should be on the main card. What? Sorry?
It is on the card of the night.
I'm just digging myself out.
In order to save your career, we're going to move on. Hey, one last thing I want to talk about while we're talking about UFC 258. I hope you enjoyed that one award nomination.
Why just go hang out with Gina in the back?
Listen,
Gina?
Oh, man. I did want to make one. One real quick, you have to talk about Bellator this week, even though they don't have any events till April. I think we all knew going in. Listen, it was the worst kept secret in the sport that they were moving over to Showtime. We all knew. That will also mean, we think, at some
Did
point.
Did we all know that?
Oh, did you know? I knew.
Oh, what, you didn't know that?
Okay. I was like, what? Like, did we not talk about that?
I just wanted.
Oh, no. Everybody knew that they were moving to Showtime. And eventually that'll probably mean some fights on CBS as well. Now, that's no guarantee at this point, but it looks like it'll probably mean some fights on CBS as well. I just want to say, I think this is a solid move. Now, listen, there's always the concern, yeah, but it's only on a premium network, so they're not going to have – but I think they are going to have some network television shows. Now, that hasn't been announced, and it's not guaranteed from what I understand, but it just makes sense. It's, I mean, they're literally owned by the company. There's no reason they're not going to end up on CBS, which I think will be great. But here's what it means to fans. You might not give – you know, why would you? Why do you care? I always say this, like, why do we care about their financial success or their ratings, whatever? The average fan doesn't. Here's what you will care about. Live across the nation and live around the world. Not only did they sign this deal with Showtime, which I think is great, because again, live, no longer this tape delay crap, which was just garbage. Live. But Oscar, I wanted you to speak to this because they signed a deal with BBC as well. Now those events are going to be live as well on the BBC iPlayer. So it's not exactly, because BBC, for people that might not know in the States or, you know, wherever else it may be, is essentially network television for England.
Yeah,
and it's very different than those that watch Pornhub. BBC is a totally different thing.
Unfortunately, so.
Totally different
this
thing. Okay, please continue.
Oh, I see. BBC being.
Yes.
Big boys.
Yes, anyway, big boys. Yes, of course.
No. So Bellator is now, because they're going to love their name to that last link. Bellator, they're now on BBC iPlayer.
If we start over now. What time?
BBC iPlayer. It's an online, you know, stream player for the channel. BBC being one of the national channels there, and Bellator's going to be live now. While most people think, well, shit, I mean, they're live, but they're on an internet channel. It's not that great. Listen, for the last 5 years, Bellator have never had a live thing on European TV or European websites. You know, it's always about, like, I know the Mac Live, we've tweeted Bellator results, and they're like, well, hold on, it's not on TV here yet.
Right.
You know, it's not here until next Wednesday. So
that's garbage.
It's crazy.
So bad.
It's absolutely fucking shit. The fact that they have at least the option of a live, the ability to watch it live, that's more important than anything else. What I think about, you know, the viewability of BBC iPlayer, that's...
Is it subscription or is it free?
No, it's free. It is free. It is free, but, I mean...
Is the BBC typically... The BBC is free over there? That's just...
Yeah,
the BBC is
free,
like, in every house. But I didn't know what the BBC iPlayer was.
No, BBC's iPlayer is free, but it's like you would have to go on your computer and type in BBC iPlayer.
You're not flipping through the channels.
And also, I can't imagine as many people being like, oh, do you know what? I'm gonna see what BBC iPlayer is showing. And then they open the laptop and watch it. You know, you tune in to watch what you want to watch.
Yeah.
But having said that, the very fact that there's something for them to find it. Because, dude, there's so many times where they announce this big fucking deal in America and they'd be like, oh, and you guys get to watch it 3 days later, baby.
So crazy,
you know,
right?
it'd be awful.
And this BBC iPlayer, it's 24/7. Like, yeah, there's always content.
It's like Netflix, but for shit.
So is it on demand or is it only live?
Yeah,
streaming?
No, it's
on demand.
I don't know for a fact, but
it's been a while since you lived there. That might be unfair to ask.
But it is. It's live, and I would imagine most of the shows on it are on demand. So you can go back and watch it.
If you turn into it, there's content that's playing on. It's not like you just go to Netflix. Like, Netflix has nothing.
No. It's a live show.
That's cool.
And I think I've been very, very critical of Bellator in the past. This is a logical next progression for them, and I hope they try and utilize it, man. Because the worst thing I think Bellator do is I've often got very frustrated with the fact that they're like, well, what we'll do is we'll sign the best European talents, and then the rest will figure itself out.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Like, you need to figure out the deals to promote these European talents, or these European talents become nothing.
And then they'll want to come on here.
I tell you what, man. We were talking earlier about Leon Edwards being, like, one of the most affected fighters by COVID. Boy, Bellator was affected by COVID, right? It seemed like they were really building some momentum in Europe,
right,
man. It seemed like they were making some waves.
Yeah, so I just kind of hate that the Bellator vibe of, like, we're the European promotion. It's like, no, you could be. You really could be, but you kind of just miss them up. But I think this one is a great step in the right direction.
Shout out to Mark Fellows, our good friend. He asked us if there was anything down there in Australia that was going to be done. I reached out to Bellator before we came over here, and I haven't heard back from them yet, but I will follow up on that to find out. But listen, I think these are these are positive moves for Bellator. No disrespect to Paramount, but I mean, it was just weird. You had one sporting one sporting franchise on there and nothing else. No shoulder programming. No, it just didn't make any sense. And I think everybody realized it. And they would never speak about it publicly, but I think behind the scenes, everybody agreed. So this Showtime deal, I think it's a big deal. And I mean, it was. I'll tell you what was kind of funny was like hearing Mauro Ranallo, obviously, like seeing him back in there, but then basically just all talking about like, we basically just picked up the Strikeforce band and brought it back together. You know what I mean? It was so funny to just hear him mention it.
Dude, the kind of thing for me is Mauro would be like, and here we go to this thing right here. And then they'd go, yeah. And so the amazing, like just the energy. I was like, fucking hell.
Oh, man. I won't say who, but immediately as soon as Steven Espinosa came on, I got a text from somebody. He's like, the weasel! sorry,
yeah,
Bellator,
I got
but it's funny. Come
I got,
on.
I got
know?
A couple of texts on myself.
Yeah, come on. Like, no disrespect. Like I said, this deal is great, but hey, when Conor McGregor brands you with something, you
get
weasel.
It.
Ask Jeremy Stevens how long you have to deal with it when Conor McGregor tells
Jose
you.
Jose Aldo, bro. Jesus.
All right, well, listen, I think that's enough from us. I think we got to get this thing in the can and get ready for weigh-ins in the morning. Of course, we will have an and a half this weekend over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow. So if you can support us over there for as little as $3 a month, I would certainly appreciate it. Either way, and more so this week than any other week, I'll tell you, thanks for listening. Ha 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 ha.